Well, hello and welcome to another episode of A Cast of Entrepreneurs. I'm Elaine Stroud, CEO of the Entrepreneurs Forum. And with me, as always, I have Sally Cowling. Good morning, Sally.
Morning.
Hey, today I have got royalty with me, royalty in Northeast Entrepreneurs. And I'm excited to get started with the conversation. So here on today's cast, we have Brendan Hayward, who is the chair of the Entrepreneurs Forum and the co-founder of Osbit. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, everybody.
And sitting alongside Brendan, I have Carrie Hours, who is the founder of O Agency and is another board member of the forum. Good morning, Carrie.
Hello, hello.
And finally, last but definitely not least, I've got Johnny Gruben, who is a fantastic entrepreneur and founder of SoPost. And we're going to find out a little bit more about your business later. But good morning.
Hello.
Well, welcome to the cast. We're excited, as I said, to have you here. What we're going to do first is I'll start with Brendan, because I know he loves to go first. And we'll talk about Osbit. And I learned what Osbit stands for yesterday because I came to your office and picked up a mug. So tell us about the origins of the business and how you got started into Osbit.
Yeah, Osbit stands for On Spec, Budget and In Time. And when you're starting out, it was quite a nice promise, particularly in our space where not everybody delivers on time and lets clients down. So it really, really helped us when we're starting out a business. We started in 2010. I wasn't really the primary founder. That was Tony Trapp, who's a bit of a seasoned entrepreneur. But there was originally three of us, and that became four. And we started Osbit, and we're now up to about 150 people. And we supply equipment in primarily offshore wind, but it's largely offshore equipment.
I think what I liked about the name is it was in time and not on time.
Because our clients are doing massive projects, we've now made that our promise after consulting with some brand people, because we didn't really know what we were doing then. But it was just a great tagline when you're starting out with a business.
And Carrie, from you also started your business when you were quite young. Been going nearly 20 years. Is it your 20th year this year?
Next year, yeah. So the business will be 19 this year. And the reason I know that is because I started it the year my daughter was born, and she'll be 19 this month. So it's the same age as the business. I started the business in 2005. O was originally founded as a PR agency. That was my background, press and PR, and has evolved over the years as marketing has changed. And we are really now a creative brand and communications agency. So we work across all platforms, from social media to press and PR to marketing channels. So it's a really exciting industry to be in. We work primarily with businesses that are headquartered in the north of England. That's changed a little bit. We have got clients outside the area now, but our sweet spot is ambitious businesses here in the north, and that makes me really proud.
Yeah, and we're in a room with ambitious business owners, one of which is Johnny. Yeah, your business, I think, is probably the youngest in the room, but is also extremely successful. It wasn't your first business. So tell us how you started SoPost and what it does.
Yeah, so I founded SoPost back in 2012. And today we provide a platform that brands and retailers use to run their digital product sampling experiences. So essentially, we help brands give away free stuff online, but in a really effective way that supports their sales goals, their data strategies, and really helps them build brand awareness generally. But that was not how SoPost started it. The name actually stands for Social Post. And the original vision, which was something that I dropped out of uni for to take an earlier version of full time, was really about changing the way the postal system worked. And I was really trying to solve two challenges. One being that I'm never at home and I always miss deliveries. And the second one being that I don't know anyone's address. And so the idea was about saying, well, your address shouldn't be where you live. It should be where you are or where you want stuff to be sent to. And it shouldn't matter if I don't know your postal address, because I know your phone number, your email address, your Twitter handle. And the vision really was that SoPost would be this dynamic address layer that would live between an online checkout and the delivery truck, or you could scribble an email address on an envelope, chuck it in the post box, and as it's going through Royal Mail system, they'd know exactly where to take it to. They'd know that Carrie's in the office today or she's at home this weekend. So that was where it started. I think one of the things I've learned over the years is to not be too tied to a certain way of reaching the destination. And, you know, to cut a very long story short, ended up running quite a gimmicky marketing campaign with Noel Gallagher of Oasis fame, which somebody quite high up at Avon Cosmetics saw. She got in touch and basically said, hey, can you adapt that for us? if you can, we'll be your first customer. We'll spend money with you. And that was really what birthed the sampling solutions, which we've been building out for the last, 11 or 12 years now.
So many questions. I was listening and I felt like I knew a little bit about your story. And then you mentioned Noel Gallagher and you're thinking, how on earth did you get that as your sort of lead into the business? And then you mentioned Avon Cosmetics, which must be one of the biggest cosmetics companies in the world. And you pick up them as your first client.
Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, it's kind of hilarious because I was 21 when I started SoPost as well. But I mean, I was just out meeting people all the time, really. And I met Noel's digital manager at a music hack event that was taking place at Facebook. And I think in hindsight, you know, I was telling him about what I was trying to build with SoPost. And I think in hindsight, he was probably, you know, saw this 21-year-old who was about to not be very successful with what he was trying to do. But, you know, we kind of took an opportunity with that. And then the Avon thing came along. I think, you know, I often reflect back on the journey and there are so many things like that where it's kind of silly, but if something had been a little bit different, you know, I never would have met that person or that thing never would have happened. And, you know, I don't think I'm smarter than anyone else, but I do think I'm quite good at creating more opportunities for that kind of interaction to happen.
So music hack event, that sounds interesting, Johnny. What's that for those of us that don't know?
Yeah, I mean, back in, so, you know, you're going back over 10 years now and, you know, these hackathons do still happen. But I remember back in 2010, 2011, every weekend there seemed to be some different tech event happening. And the model really was that you get programmers together, you get product people together, and over the course of a day or a weekend, you'd form a team and try to build something that solved the challenge that had been set. And so this particular one, Facebook were hosting it. I mean, there were probably a couple of hundred people there just all hacking together these ideas to see what they could produce over the weekend. And you know, for me, I'm not a programmer, so it was less about what I could build, but it was more just about being immersed in that environment and, you know, working with people from record labels, from, you know, programming backgrounds and a whole swathe of other areas. It's kind of weird because I don't have any background in music. I'm not musically talented in any way, but, you know, I found that it was a community of people that were really welcoming. And particularly back then, everyone was just, I think, so excited about what they could build with technology, what APIs could do. And it felt like just a, you know, really incredible culture to be a part of.
So talking of cultures, that's one of the reasons why we've got three fantastic seasoned entrepreneurs in here today who've built businesses, who've got great cultures. So just Carrie, I know that you've won a couple of awards based on the culture that you've grown at O. What makes it so special at O Agency?
I mean, the people. The people make it special, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? I don't think our culture is any sort of more or less special than any other. We just work really hard at it. It's something I always wanted from the get-go. I never really set out to build an agency at all. I never really had the intention to employ people, but really from the moment I employed my first young person in the business, I hired a graduate. It was all I could afford in the early days. I kind of took the responsibility of their experience as seriously as I could because I sort of felt that was a privilege. Like, I can actually run a business and shape somebody else's day-to-day career and experience in life. And, you know, that meant a lot to me. I'm very inspired by entrepreneurs that have purpose. You know, I've always looked at the fabulous Anita Roddick. I just loved her business and her business ethic. They obviously were very successful at the body shop at the time, obviously not so much now, but they had a real sort of thread running through them as a business. And that was very early. You know, people weren't doing that in those days. And that was I think being a female entrepreneur, there weren't many examples in the media. And she was one in the media when I was growing up. So it just was a sort of a collision of an inspiring female role model and the fact that it was a business with purpose. So when it came much further down the line to me actually employing people, that kind of came to the fore, and it's been something we've always tried to work as hard as possible at.
So you've consciously kind of grown the business with culture at the forefront?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. We're a relatively small business. There's only about 25 of us. You know, certainly in our space, there's lots of businesses that are much bigger than ours. But, you know, that was my intention, to put culture first. and not to lose that by just chasing growth. And we've been very successful at that. You know, the business is 19. It's a really healthy business. We've had some real great success stories through our door. I'm really, really proud of some of the people that are still with us, but also have gone on around the world and have phenomenal careers. And, you know, that's something that I will take with me way beyond my days of owning and running a business.
And do you think your culture has changed? You say it's business is 19 years old. Do you think things have evolved and changed? Is it different to when you first
set
out?
Yeah, for sure. I think it would be wrong for it not to. I don't think our values have changed. So that will always stay at the heart of things. And that's something that I try and live and breathe every day. That's my responsibility as the founder and leader of the business to make sure I check myself and I live those values every day. And then that inspires others to do the same. But I think the culture has certainly changed and has evolved as we've grown, as other people have come into leadership roles. Of course, it should change a little bit. And, you know, it's important that it changes and evolves with the people. They should feed into it and be part of it and have their own say in what the culture of the business should look like.
And how do you get the people involved? Is it something that you do sort of on an ongoing basis, or do you have regular check-ins with people? How do you get people to really live and shape the culture going forwards?
All the time. All the time. So everything from the way that we check in with our people at one-to-ones and get-togethers to regular team town halls, as much internal comms as we can fit into the week, the way that we cascade information down, our well-being policies and how we sort of make sure that we, you know, we never forget to ask somebody, is everything okay? As we're going through the daily busyness and pressures. We're a business of big highs and lows, you know, like it's a very fun industry to be in, marketing and creative. We do some really fun stuff, but it's also quite high pressure and quite fast paced. So, you know, we're very mindful of being very clear about that when people are coming into the industry and having as much in place to support them being able to be resilient with that and to ride those highs and lows and enjoy the great days and support each other. We've got your back is one of our values, support each other on the days where it's really quite full on. But we have to talk to them all the time. And we've got things like we change stuff up all the time. We've got an innovation board now, which is a lot of the younger people in the business, and we get them together and just say, tell us how we can be better. Like, what do you see? You know, what are you seeing on TikTok? What are you seeing where your friends are working? What types of things matter to you? Because actually, they're quite different to what matters to me or what matters to their manager. So we've tried to really sort of open up that debate as much as we can.
Yeah, that's interesting. I love the idea of the young people coming in and having a chance to have an input when they're still quite young in their career. That's something I know, Brendan, that you're quite passionate about, is the young people who are coming into your business as engineers. How do you engage that next generation of engineers coming through Osbit and making sure that they're buying into the culture that you're creating?
Just responsibility, I think. We give people a vast amount of responsibility. I think for us, from day one, you can't have successful execution and profit without culture. They're completely intertwined. In our industry, again, is very fast price, high pressure, global, and we've got clients with massive, massive liabilities, so we can't be late. But we take a huge amount of graduates, we have over the years, and I mean, right down to, I think it was probably 8 years ago now, but we're doing this all the time, but we had a student placement with us. We obviously evaluate everybody on an individual basis on what they're capable of. We just won an order with a client. It was 100,000. It was a perfect project for this person. So despite them being a student, we said, right, okay, you're running this project, you're delivering it, you're going to front it with a client. And then myself and another director at the time works part-time for them. So we had two hats. We had the director's hat, but then we just had an engineer's hat. So we were working for the student, and that person went on and they were with us for 8 months. By the time they left, the project had grown to over 500,000. They'd delivered the whole project. They ran it all. It was theirs. Well, that experience journey is transformative because I'm really passionate within culture. There's self-limiting beliefs. That's what everybody's coming up against every day. So giving people the opportunity just take responsibility, explore themselves, explore their own constraints, self-limiting beliefs, push those boundaries within the support. We've got two part-time personal development coaches that support everybody in the business. That allows people to grow. And we're still doing that now. About 12 months ago, we delivered a 1,600-ton offshore upending hinge for installing offshore monopiles. And that was owned by, I think he was 30, all the site work in Singapore, team of about 30 people. That was run by a 26-year-old. And that project was delivered from start to finish in 45 weeks. Well, that is insane.
Yeah. I'd like to give you a big clap for that. And one of the things that I think you've done and you've told me about before is giving everybody the title of engineer. So you don't have you're the senior engineer or your role is this, because you're more bringing people together for that particular project. And they're all engineers. But let's work out what skills that particular engineer has that fits this project. And that, I guess, will unlock those limited beliefs because you're not restrained by a job title.
Yeah, absolutely. I remain utterly bemused that everybody, and this was myself included, we see the world through a hierarchical lens. It's complete nonsense. That's just social programming. But that is such an inhibiting factor. And the amount of times we interview people, they say, hang on a minute, you've got this really flat company hierarchy. Well, how do I progress? It's like, well, hierarchy doesn't help you progress. What helps you progress is get lots of experience. Go out, have conversations, work with people, take responsibility, make mistakes. We make sure that mistakes are major. But it's that journey that allows people to progress. But yeah, I'm always astonished that people just see this hierarchy and that's the way to progress.
I think that's fantastic that you've got a structure, though, where you've got directors working for someone who essentially is kind of quite junior. And it really demonstrates that you, as directors, believe in that person.
Well, I think coming back to what Carrie said about values, like loads of people say they don't have an ego, but hierarchy does promote ego. It also promotes the basis that you've got fonts of knowledge, which again is nonsense, particularly in what we do. So why wouldn't we as directors work for a student? They're doing a role.
It's very different, though, to how traditional businesses are run, I guess, which is, you know, it's great to hear that you're doing something different, which works. Brilliant.
And Johnny, listening to that, what's your observations on what Brendan is doing and how do you get that sort of sense of development in your business?
I mean, I think it's pretty incredible. And, you know, from a SOPOS perspective, again, there are some very good examples I could point to of people who, certainly from an age perspective, are quite young, but have gone off and done incredible things. But I think it's something that is quite hard to do, particularly as the business scales. So, you know, I'm in awe of this, particularly, you know, we do complex stuff with software, but ultimately we're sending product samples. It sounds like if you get something wrong, it's a whole other ball game. So, you know, I'm fascinated by all of that. But I think from my perspective, one of the things I've always been quite keen to ensure is that we're creating those opportunities for people to come through and thrive. You know, I've always viewed this kind of thing as a two-way street, right? Like I can create an environment for you to come here and really develop your career and grow and learn things, but you need to be a part of that as well. And, you know, I think my responsibility is make sure that I'm creating that environment and then, you know, ensuring that we're encouraging people to come through and do that. And I do think actually where you have an organization that isn't necessarily so focused on the hierarchy, but I'm going to disagree with you here a little bit, Brendan, does show people very clearly sort of what those support structures look like, where the decision making is done. I do actually think that's quite helpful for individuals because it shows them that, you know, we are really trusting you with these big projects, but we're not just throwing you in at the deep end and kind of giving you full control and ownership of these big projects.
I totally agree. Every business needs structure and it needs process. Mm-hmm. And given what we do, we need a lot of structure and process because of the safety. But my point is that's different to hierarchy. Like it's not the same as hierarchy. Hierarchy is the pyramid, mm-hmm. whereas having that structure, as you said, to manage people's expectations, allow them to know when they have to come and ask,
Absolutely, all required.
Yeah. Okay, so it's more sort of, I don't know how you'd put it, kind of like levels of authority and decision-making frameworks rather than simply, I'm your boss, so...
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's define the roles and responsibility for that project that you're working on and who's responsible for what. And you've got to make those really clear, don't you? People always want to know where they sit.
So I guess my question for you, Brendan, would be what gave you or you know other individuals in the business the confidence to say to this 26-year-old, this is yours, you're going to be running it? And was there anything that differed about that individual as opposed to somebody else within the company?
Yeah, I think we... interesting question, because I'm a farm boy and not sure I'm allowed to say this, but I started driving a tractor at 9. So when you grow up in an environment where you just get on and do stuff, and that slightly comes back to your point right at the start, like opportunity comes from doing things, even if they're slightly naive or misguided at that point in time, out of that falls new opportunities. So I think, yes, it's absolutely individual. So you have to just look at the person, look at the opportunity. So that example I gave earlier, that particular project was ideal. It could have been a different project which might not have lent itself to that. That particular person fitted it. So you have to match the opportunities to the people, and everybody's different. So somebody else might need a different type of responsibility.
Yeah. And I guess what you're saying is opportunity comes from probably experience, and the way you've developed your culture is the experiences you've had. So learning to drive a tractor because you had to at the age of 9, dealing with cows. You can't have an ego if you've got a cow about to kick you, can you?
Yep,
and you've
said that
before. I guess for Carrie and for Johnny, you were nodding your heads. I know we can't see this because it's audio, when we were talking about the experience lends you to build your culture. So my question is, what in your pre-running your business life gave you that experience to decide that actually this culture and the way I want to do it is, that's me and that's how I've developed?
So I spent 10 years working for other people before I set up on my own. And as I said before, it wasn't really my intention to set up and grow a business and hire other people and create an agency. That kind of happened organically. In terms of the culture, I don't think it was necessarily anything that I learned in those first 10 years. I saw as much good and bad, can I say, you know, in the industry. And I'm not talking about my employers because, you know, I learned so much from them. But just generally in the industry, the first 10 years, I saw a fair amount of bad practice as well as good. I certainly kind of came into the industry and I actually am really grateful. I got thrown in at the deep end. I didn't really get any training. I just kind of said yes to everything, grabbed every opportunity, learned as I went along. But I had an incredibly entrepreneurial first boss who sat in the same room as us, and I felt I could ask questions. I think every entrepreneur I know is doing it for different reasons, but quite often we do feel like we're serving the people that work for us. You know, I think that's a really common theme. And I still think to this day, my job is to serve the people that come into the building every morning. I am there for them and as much as my clients. So I don't often think that kind of trope of an entrepreneur having a big ego actually commonly exists as much as people think. I think a lot of the time we are, you know, trying to do our best and grow a great team. In terms of sort of where I wanted my culture to be, it was probably more influenced by my family background. And I think I just wanted to create a place where people were happy. I had a really incredibly happy upbringing and very supportive family. I was given an awful lot of freedom. I was a bit of a creative rebel. So I was supported in that and given every opportunity. And I think that was what kind of instilled in me that I wanted to create an environment where, I always kind of call it a meritocracy. You know, I don't care what age somebody is. If they've got a phenomenal attitude and they're capable, like Brendan does, I will say, you know what, that individual needs an opportunity. And I find myself stepping in quite a bit now in the business. I don't run the business operationally day to day. I've got a managing director who makes those decisions. But I will float around and spot talent, and I'll kind of go to her and say, that young person needs more responsibility. They are great. Or that returning mum or whoever it might be. It's not sort of, I'm quite age agnostic. And I think it's more about, we're just a big collection of individuals, and it's, I think my talent has been able to spot the differences between those individuals and try and play to their strengths as much as I can. And that, I think, is what's quite special about our culture. We've had people rise through the ranks at a very, very young age and take on really big projects. We haven't gone as sort of formally down the route of saying a director works for them, but I absolutely love that idea. I'm definitely going to try and pinch that, because I think that that is naturally what I've always kind of done. When somebody's led a project, I've always said, I'm here to support you on this. Call on me if there's a question, if you're not sure, or if something's not going quite right, absolutely come. And so I felt like I was sort of serving them from an arm's length.
If you're enjoying the conversations on this podcast, then get involved. The Entrepreneurs Forum is a membership organisation for entrepreneurs based in the northeast of England. You can find out all the details by going to our website, entrepreneursforum.net. And for Johnny, you started the business at 21, but what were your influences before that business that you've then taken into the business? I mean, I guess, did you know any other business owners or entrepreneurs as you were growing up?
Well, I've always been quite entrepreneurial, is probably one way to put it. I launched my first business when I was 13 or 14. And, there was never particularly a plan to be an entrepreneur or to start a business. I think a lot of it is it's just always been kind of in my bones, in my blood. And whether it was starting a business or just doing other creative things, I think I've always had quite an optimistic outlook on things and always had, these big dreams and visions, which for the most part remain as dreams and visions. But I think just having that outlook on things and, having a family that gave me permission to try my own stuff meant that I always felt like it was possible to go and do my own thing. And so before I started SoPost, I was involved in a lot of different things. I only really had one proper job before the company, but I was involved with startups that I was doing myself, some that I'd done with other people. And I think a lot of where I got to really just developed naturally. And I don't know how much of it was a conscious recognition of, oh, I should do things this way or I should do things that way. I think a lot of it, probably in a similar way to what Carrie was saying, has come from how I want to be treated, how I want to treat people, and the kind of organization that I want to be building. And I think I've always known that I never wanted to lead or be a part of an organization that was just a job. For me, it's always been important that it's an enjoyable place to be. It sounds silly, but it's a fun place to be. I think we often forget how important it is to have fun in what we're doing. And I think a lot of that has really just influenced some of, how I've approached building the company and then the culture that's developed alongside it.
And I think that's becoming more important for people who come and work for you, that they see that you're actually a business with purpose, that you, really value those people. So it's important part of your business proposition as well to have that really solid culture that people know what they're coming into when they come and work for you.
Oh, absolutely, because it gives you so much more than simply, can this person do the job, yes or no? And I think for us, one of the big signs that it is working and that we are creating that positive environment, because of course I don't really have too much to benchmark against aside from my own experiences, is we have people leave the business and then they come back a couple of years later, which for me, says, okay, we are doing something right. And you know what, we might not always be able to pay the salaries that other people can pay, but we're creating an environment that actually you want to be a part of, and we're creating an environment that gives those growth opportunities that perhaps aren't always available to you elsewhere.
And do any of you measure that in terms of your employee retention or people who do return? How do you kind of measure the value of your culture to the business?
I mean, yeah, our staff turnover has been less than 1% for the entirety of us. But as I said, we're up to about 150 now, still growing. In regards to measuring culture itself, I think I agree with Carrie and Johnny. I think it's quite hard to measure because you want to be having fun. You want to be making a difference. I don't think you can ever measure that stuff. You can feel it, though. And whenever I walk into another business, you can feel it. You can taste it in the air. I love the quote, leaders have the unique opportunity to change somebody's life every single day. But I think, actually, I would reword that. In a business with a great culture, everybody in the business has the opportunity to change somebody else's life every single day, because you're teaching somebody else, you're mentoring them, you're supporting them.
Yeah, I read somewhere, actually, you should get home and say, what have I taught someone today? And if you can answer, yes, I've taught someone something, then that's a good place to be.
And Brendan, just going back to your sort of pre-Ausbit days, obviously you worked previously for some other businesses. Is there anything that you brought from them that you've kind of played out in Ausbit to create that culture, or anything that you have consciously said, we're not going to be doing it like that at Ausbit?
Yeah, all of that. I think because of the farm upbringing and interest in psychology, etc., I've always been passionate about culture. In parallel with which, there's a history in offshore northeast engineering, which started in the 70s, which I'm not going to talk about now because that'll take another hour. But it absolutely incredible story. But that kind of started with Alan Rees, Tony Trapp coming out of Newcastle University. But they brought that university common room theme with them. So breakfast, lunch, afternoon tea, always provided. Everybody sat together, chatted. That's flowed through all those businesses right through into Ausbit. So things like that absolutely was carried. Things that we've tried to avoid, I think often, I don't know if it's all businesses, particularly engineering businesses, communication with people, not always great. Feedback, not always great. So we've really, really tried to, you know, from day one in Ausbit, we did bi-directional personal development plans. They were not linked to money deliberately. They weren't linked to title deliberately. They were just purely about personal development, and it was two-way. And that was to try and overcome some of the communication challenges. The culture for us has definitely changed over the years, partly through time, but also size. Because, you know, the difference between a 30-person team that we had way back to 150 is just a totally different set of challenges. But at the root of that is communication, because a team of 30 communicate completely differently to a team of 150.
Yeah, communication is really key. And Johnny, for your business, as you've grown, I've seen you do these big sort of conferences and get people. So tell me about, how many staff do you have? And are they located in lots of different locations?
So there are about 70 of us in the company, headquartered in Newcastle. But then we also have offices in, let's see if I remember them all, London, New York, Paris, Frankfurt and Sydney, Australia. So, you know, not just multiple locations, but pretty much every single time zone there is. And what's been quite interesting for me is we were never all based in one place anyway. When the business started, we were immediately split between Newcastle and London. So our culture quite naturally developed with that kind of hybrid type model anyway. And then we went into the pandemic. The business grew quite a lot, particularly in terms of the people side of things. And we were really looking for a way to bring back, I think, a lot of what was lost when everyone was remote. You know, you can do these weekly all hands, or we currently have a Miles in March step challenge, which is something that we introduced. And all of those things help. But, you know, I think that the real measure of the culture for me anyway is what happens when you're in a room together. And so we launched SoPost Week, which we do once a year, and we get the entire company to Newcastle for a week. So it's not just an opportunity to show everyone from Australia, from the States, you know, this amazing city, but actually it's a chance to share part of our vision and our strategy for the company, to provide some kind of workshops and development opportunities. But by far the most important thing for me is that, you know, people are just spending time together, and particularly those individuals who aren't necessarily interacting with each other on a day-to-day basis. What we found is that coming out of SoPost Week, it's not just something that happens in its own silo. It really impacts how we communicate with each other, the culture that we've been creating on an ongoing basis. And I think it's done a lot to really help amplify a lot of the things that have been happening in the business anyway. You know, I don't think that week is the reason our culture is the way it is, but I think, you know, it certainly helped influence how people approach things and how we all treat each other across the organization.
I think it sounds fun.
It's so much fun. And we had, so the year before last was our 10th birthday. So we went all out for that. But not only did we have the whole company here, but we had, you know, friends of the business, people who have helped us out over the years. We had some clients fly in. And for me personally, it was really extraordinary to see. And, you know, if I was going back a decade and thinking that's where you'll be in 10 years' time, it was really incredible. And one of the things that happened off the back of that, which nobody told me was happening, was there was, you know, this big board with our logo on. It's now proudly hanging in our new office in Newcastle. And it has probably about 70 different people, you know, they've written things on there about their experience with SoPost and what it's done for their careers and their lives. And, you know, I think that's all the intangible stuff about culture, which really to me says you're building a good organization here. And, it, you know, it's not just about what the P&L looks like. It's about the impact and the influence that you've been able to have on people.
I'd like to have an invite now to your office to come and have a read of that. I'll be chatting to you later about that. Carrie, you were talking earlier about the importance of the surroundings and the actual infrastructure in terms of the team and bringing people together. And I know that's something you've done quite well post sort of COVID, when we were forced to work from home, to creating this sort of infrastructure and creative spaces where people can come together. Can you tell us a little bit about your views on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting, Jenny, that you say that the magic happens when you all get in the same room. And I am so pleased we're able to do that. Now, I think the pandemic for me was probably the most challenging period of being a leader in the whole 19 years that I've run the business, and for all manner of reasons, but primarily because I couldn't look in somebody's eyes and have that face-to-face conversation. There is something about human connection that is super, super important when you are trying to motivate and inspire and help somebody develop in their career, especially the younger people in the business. Our environment has always been really important to me. I am one of those people that's very sort of affected by the environment around me. You know, everything from I have to get out in the fresh air every single day. I have to not be surrounded by four walls. It's really, really important to me to get a little bit of fresh air every day. But actually the place that I work is really important. I don't particularly enjoy working from home. I will do it if I've got some deep work to do, and that does work. But I like to be around other people. Being a creative person, I think that's probably quite expected. We bought our own building, which is a part of an old brewery building, gorgeous old building. We ripped it apart. We spent a lot of money making it really cool, really lovely place for our people to hang out. And we finished it a matter of probably weeks before March 2020, when I had to stand in a room and say, guys, you all need to go home now. That broke my heart, if I'm honest, because we were just really starting to enjoy that space together. So really, as the regulations and guidelines allowed us to start to come back into the office, we were very keen to try and do that as best we could. So I would say, you know, I've always been quite vocal that, you know, we do work in a hybrid way. People can work from home on certain days, but we do encourage the team to come together. We are quite unapologetic about that. And that does, in some respects, inhibit some of our recruitment, because some people nowadays just want a completely remote role. Absolutely fine, but it probably wouldn't be with us, because we are the type of business that is incredibly collaborative, and we like to come into the same space and throw ideas around and be that support for each other day to day. And we've got a pool table, which is a bit of a creative agency cliche, but it's very popular, as is the bar.
And for you, Brendan, what about the surroundings at Osbit? Is that something that you think attracts people to come and work there?
Yeah, absolutely. Partly due to history, but we've got an old country house in Riding Mill, and we outgrew it a number of years ago. So we decided we'd start looking around at offices, and then we asked everybody, what did they want to do? And we're next to a cricket pitch, and as I said, we provide breakfast, lunch, afternoon tea, so people can sit outside or go on the cricket pitch in the summer. And it's just a lovely space to be. You've got the stone, the architecture. We actually then bought the plot, built a new office out the back. We're going to build another office, hopefully back end of this year, next, for another 70 people. But the other key thing is, it's not just us that feel that. Anywhere in the world, you bump into a client. Glass offices are so forgettable, whereas when they've come to the Osbit space, they never ever forget it, even if they've just been once.
It sounds idyllic. I feel like we might need to move in there, Elaine.
Well, I did go yesterday and it was lovely because someone brought me breakfast and I wasn't expecting that. It was very nice. So we talked a lot about culture. We've talked a lot about your own businesses. Let's look at influences and sources of inspiration. And I've got a question for you all. And that's, if you could be a fly on the wall in someone else's business, whether that's in their boardroom or just going have a look around somewhere where you think, actually, I wouldn't mind just having a nose about with that person and see what goes on behind closed doors, who would that be?
I've been really lucky to actually get inside lots and lots and lots of boardrooms in the last 28 years I've been doing this job. I often say that it is the biggest privilege to be a PR and comms consultant. It has allowed me into, I mean, I think I've worked with over 500 businesses now or something ridiculous. So I have had so much insight that, you know, I've seen good and bad. Some of the places that I remember really, really well. Double 11, the tech business, they're moving into some fantastic new offices. Well, when I went down to visit Kim in their original offices, I was just blown away by the setup and the way that they have created a culture. And they are primarily a team of sort of developers, games developers and techie people, who probably quite different to the types of creatives that I hire, who do like to be sort of talking and chatting all the time. But she's set this kind of amazing culture up in her business. And places like Opencast. So Mike recently sort of showed me around that business, and I'm really fascinated by businesses like SoPost and some of, you know, these tech businesses that are growing really, really quickly, but have these sort of incredible environments and incredible sort of ways of having quite a sort of transparent and open way of working, not just in the build, but in the way that they sort of run their businesses.
And is there anywhere you'd like to go that you've never been?
I mean, yeah, wouldn't everybody love to be a fly in the wall when Elon Musk's chairing a board meeting or something like that? I think it's probably the ones that are maybe known for like
A bit of fireworks,
yeah. It's like what is it really like? I'd love to go and sort of go behind the scenes in a, you know, in Facebook or one of those sort of big businesses where they've got these like really big sort of prominent figureheads, and you sort of know them as being the sort of lifeblood of the business, and you kind of think, how on earth does that work? So I'm quite fascinated by that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think we're all fascinated by the people, aren't we? And saying, if you've got this big figurehead, how does that work if you're in a boardroom with 15 others? Are they dominant? How does it? I'd be fascinated too. How about you, Johnny?
There are two that come to mind really for very similar reasons, and they're Boeing and Newcastle United. You know, I think obviously there's a lot of bad stuff happening at Boeing at the moment, and really I'm just fascinated by understanding how they got there, but also, you know, how they're going to manage and carve their way out of it. I think there's so much you can learn when stuff isn't going right, and I'd really love just to be a fly on the wall and experience all of that. And then for a very similar reason, Newcastle United, you know, I'm sure we all know the story of the club over the past few years. But again, I've been, not so much from a business perspective, but, you know, it all flows right the way through. I've just been amazed at the impact Eddie Howe's had and the impact that's had on the performance of the team. And it really seems like they've been able to bring this high-performance culture and mentality and pride to the club, which for so long was lacking. And again, just because I'm curious to see how Boeing got to where it is. It's really flipping it the other way around. But, you know, I'd love to get that inside look at understanding how Eddie Howe and everyone right across the club has been able to create quite an incredible change of fortune in not a very long period of time.
Yeah, and essentially with the same players.
Yeah.
Maybe some money spent somewhere, but a lot of the players are the same, but they've managed to transform that culture.
Yeah, and I think it probably says a lot about, you know, the environments that you create, how you work with people, how you instill confidence in them. I think it's very easy to say you can just throw money at a problem. That's never been my view on things. And, you know, I think it would just be incredible to peek under the hood at how they've really been able to do that.
Okay, so if anyone from the football club is listening, Johnny would like an in.
Me too. Some tickets would be nice as well.
Okay, we'll bring all of the Entrepreneurs Forum in. Brendan, you've had a chance to think now.
Well, I did jump immediately to Elon Musk, not because I'm a super fan of his, but he is fascinating. And as Kerry said, when you've got such a dominant personality right at the top of very big businesses, how does it work? SpaceX, though, I think that would be, you know, from an engineering point of view, what they've done in a very short amount of time has been unbelievable, really. So getting in there. I think the reason I hesitate is probably is because I have a slight caution around board meetings and their authenticity. I love walking around businesses, though, because you get the chance to talk to the security guard and the cleaners and the everybody and just get the feel of the business. And I think coming back to your point on Boeing, when you walk around a business and just talk to people, you start to get a feel of culture, but also the communication and not conscious dishonesty, but you can start to see the trajectory of why businesses end up going off course. And, you know, something we talk about a lot in Osbit is everybody owns culture. Like, don't come into Osbit expecting to be given the culture and just experience it for free. Like, you are part of tomorrow's culture. So if you start being rude to people or arrogant, those traits will set the scene for tomorrow's culture. And I can't do anything about that. So don't expect me to eradicate it. It's you. So, yeah.
And you see that, don't you, on a site visit? You see that because you'll be behind the scenes and you notice things other than the person taking you around, but you notice the security guard, you notice the receptionist, you see what's on the walls and how organised their notice boards are and all of that. It's fascinating.
You can feel it. I mean, like I say, I've had the privilege of visiting so many sites, so many businesses over the years. And when I've got an appointment with the CEO or the sort of founder of a business, I always remember the ones who have somebody usher you up to an office to meet them, or the ones that come down to meet you, and how they walk the floor back to where you're sort of going to have your chat. Very, very, very early on in my career, I had the pleasure of having a meeting with Sir Peter Vardy. I think it was actually around the launch of the original launch of the Entrepreneurs Forum, because I was involved in that. And the way he walked through that building and knew everybody's name and spoke to people, like, really impressed me, because I'd never really seen that before. And now when I meet other people, that's how you feel the culture, because it is led from the front. And I had the privilege of being mentored by and working with John Waterworth from Park Dean Resorts for a number of years. And he was the same. He would come down and meet you and he'd chat away to the receptionist, who had obviously been there for years and years, and they knew each other really well. He knew everybody in the business and he knew about their kids and their families, and he just walked the floor. And I think that's such an important thing for leaders to do in culture, and not sit in a board meeting making decisions and not getting out and actually engaging with the people that are making it happen.
Well, and I think a key part of culture is, for me, is it's as much about challenging people than it is about giving cuddles. But it's challenging in a really honest, supportive environment where people don't feel threatened. And that's how people achieve their best, because they can really feel safe to push their boundaries.
I learned that actually. It took quite a few years, if I'm really honest, to understand that culture is not about being cozy. You know, it's as much fostering the good behaviours, but also not tolerating the bad. And I think that's where, you know, isn't there an expression, you're only as happy as your least happy child? Well, I think your culture's only as good as the behaviours that you tolerate. And so that isn't the easiest thing. And if you've not got, I didn't have any training in managing people really until I started running my own business. And it took me a number of years to sort of really get the confidence to have that radical candor and have those conversations. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, but you absolutely have to be supportive, but be really, really honest. And I think that's what creates really, really good culture.
Yeah, I definitely recommend, you just mentioned radical candor, but the book, it's Kim Scott, isn't
yes.
it, who wrote it, who's a US tech entrepreneur. I think she worked at Facebook or one of the big San Francisco companies. It's a really good book, and I definitely recommend, if you're listening there, Radical Candor by Kim Scott.
So you've all got absolutely masses of experience on building cultures. There will be some people listening who are just starting out on their journey, and maybe it feels a bit daunting to think, what is my culture going to be like? What advice have you got for people who are starting out with their business? You know, they may be starting to employ their first few people. How do you set that strategy culture from the start?
I think it's pretty straightforward, at least at the start, which is, it's just about who you hire and who you're working with. You can define a culture or your values any way you want, but the reality is, you know, it's the people that live and breathe it and bring it to life. And, you know, I think one of the things that we've done well as a business is we've really focused on who we're bringing into our team. Because, again, we can say our culture's this, but if the people that you're hiring don't align with that, very quickly, what you think your culture is, it's probably not going to be what the culture actually is. So I think, you know, when you're starting out, I think just be really clear on the type of person or people you want to be working with, and figure out a way to vet for that when you're hiring.
And what if you get it wrong? I'm sure you'll have all made hires that haven't quite worked out in the way you've thought? Have you got moved them on as quickly as you should have done?
I can't speak for the others, but I know I've certainly made a number of hires in the past that haven't worked out. My big regret from all of them is that I haven't taken corrective action sooner.
Yeah, I think that's commonplace. So advice to anyone listening is take corrective action quickly.
Yeah, and I think just trust your gut. I'm the kind of person who always, you know, sees the good, wants to give more chances. I think ultimately, you know when you know, and you've got to do the hard things sometimes. Because also, if something's not working out for you in the business, chances are the person on the other side is feeling the same way. And I think I've been surprised actually at how good for everyone involved some of those conversations have been, because you know, it's not been a nice place for anybody to be in. And it's just taken that, you know, real honesty to get to a positive solution.
And Brendan, for you, top advice to the entrepreneurs, and they might be your forum members or aspiring entrepreneurs who are listening to this podcast, what advice would you give for them in terms of managing their people?
I've always thought about culture as like gardening. Like, it needs constant attention, constant decisions on what to do to make it better. It changes over time as the garden matures. Again, if something needs pruning, you need to prune it. Just get on with it. But if something needs nurturing, it all depends on the people. One other point I was going to make before, actually, was the other reason I'm passionate about culture is not because we get it right all the time, by the way, because given what we do and the pressure we're under, sometimes we get it wrong. But a key part, coming back to Kerry's point, you need to be hearing that at every level in the organisation and in the boardroom, and think, okay, we got that wrong, we screwed up, or we didn't support them quite as much as we should have. How do we change that and do that better in future? You need to be working on it just every single day of the week.
I kind of like the gardening analogy. I think that's really good, except I'm a rubbish gardener, so part of it scares the hell out of me because I think all my plants will die.
But that's the key point. It's not about whether you're good or not. I think it comes back to common sense, gut, perseverance. You just got to do it every single day. Stick at it.
My house plants are getting watered tonight. Definitely. Okay, well, we're coming towards the end of the conversation. That hour has absolutely flown by, and some really fascinating insights from all three of you. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast. We're going to just wrap up with one final question, and that is, if you could relive any moment from your entrepreneurial journey again, what would that moment be? We'll just do a quick roundup.
Day one. I mean, I think almost every entrepreneur is probably going to say that sort of buzz of getting something going is a really exciting time. I don't think I would do a great deal differently. So I'm not saying I want to go back to day one with all the knowledge I've got now and do it differently. I just think, you know, I'd like to be 31 again and giving it another go. Yeah, I think day one, that sort of whole buzz of the unexpected, because, you know, Brendan's quite right. I'm a work in progress. We're a work in progress. Our culture is a work in progress. And that's the way it should be. So, you know, I'd like to go back and do it all over again.
Great answer. Johnny?
It might sound a bit cliche now that you've said that, but I'd love to relive the first deal that I ever did, the first time someone agreed to invest in me, and the first time I hired someone, because there was just such a thrill and a buzz from all of that. It's like, whoa, this stuff's like actually happening. Someone's taking a bet on me. And, you know, I think it just opened up so much possibility in my mind. And I still remember the feeling that I had, and I would love to, you know, go through all of that again.
And Brendan?
I'm going to be annoying. I'm proud of what we have achieved. It's a bit irrelevant to me because I'm just obsessed about what we can build in the future. So I don't really need to relive anything. I'm just more interested in what we can do in the future.
That's a good answer and a good way to end this podcast. And one of the things you can do in the future is listen to more episodes. There's lots of episodes coming up on A Cast of Entrepreneurs. Thank you so much to Sally and to Brendan, Johnny and Carrie. Keep listening, subscribe, and we look forward to hearing more about your businesses in the future.